Welcome to another episode of Thoughts of a Techno Wizard. Yeah. It is February 21st, 12:30 p.m., 2023. It's a Tuesday. And on this not super beautiful Tuesday, but nice day to walk. I hope it doesn't rain on me. On this day, went into, I know I've talked about it a lot the past couple episodes, but it is really important, right? Because it's very impactful, has the potential to really mess up the world even more, but also to make the world a lot better if we do it right. So Bing, or specifically AI, this whole AI stuff, right? So I remember last time I was talking about why I was excited about Bing AI's implementation, right? If you look at how they were planning to roll this out, it looked very promising, right? And I talked a lot about that last time. Go check that out. But I also mentioned what I was worried about. But something, when I actually took a look at it, I had some time to take a look at it the last couple of days. I didn't get access to the full product, right? But like, you have to like wait list. You have to get on the wait list or whatever, which is silly, but you know. But you can check out the demos, right? You can do it right now if you have Edge or Bing or whatever. Just go ahead and pull up Bing. That's their search engine, and then either on the slide or on the top or whatever, they're going to have a link to their, or tab or button or whatever, to their chat or Bing AI or whatever you want to call it. And you can click there and you can get on a wait list, and or you can just try out some of the demos, right? The very same ones that they were showing off in their video. And what you'll see in those demos, right? There's a lot of them. So some of them are like, oh, ask it about how to, help me come up with the exercise plan, or help me plan a trip, or bunch of other things, right? But I tried, I remember those because those were the ones I tried, at least the first ones I tried in depth. And what you notice that is it does indeed look good, right? It looks competent, right? It looks fairly well designed. Now, there are plenty of things you can pick apart about it. Microsoft has never been, unfortunately, very good at having super polished design, to say the least. But it looks good enough, right? It looks fairly simple. You can enter a prompt. You can get, you know, what looks to be a nice cited list of search results. So it looks like it's a great way to instantly see, you know, to instantly get answers to whatever questions you have, or instantly see the search results for whatever questions you have. And unlike a regular, you know, search engine where you have to, you know, go through each link to really see what's up, what's going on, or, you know, where you just read the little blurb to try and understand what's in the page. Here, because the quote-unquote AI summarize it for you, you don't really have to click into it if you don't want to, but you do see like citations that link to those pages, so you can say, okay, you know, maybe I want to learn more about this, so I can click into it. But here's where things went wrong. I clicked into it, right? Now, all these links are indeed real, at least they seem to be. I haven't checked every single demo, but for the ones I've seen so far, all the links seem to be real. But what you begin to realize is that the information that it is citing is not real, or at least is not found on those pages. For instance, and this is really clear, thanks to the first example I tried, like create an exercise plan. So in the prompt, I believe it was saying something like, oh, you can do push-ups, you can do sit-ups, you know, your standard, you know, exercise plan stuff. I mean, I was like, okay, yeah, obviously. And this is one of the reasons why I chose it, because it's something I'm familiar with. As somebody who has been doing a lot of, you know, at-home exercises and stuff like that, I already know a good amount of things in this regard. So, yeah, I was like, okay, yeah, seems obvious. But then I was like, you know what, let me see if they have a specific way I can do these push-ups or this, that, and the other. So I clicked into the first link in which they highlighted, right? They said, oh, this is, like, you can do push-ups, blah, 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 and then it had a link to this page. I forgot the exact name of the page, but there was a link for it. So I clicked into that link, and what you see is not even an article. It's a video. Now, before I even get into the contents of the video, let me be clear here. What's really important for people to realize is that these, specifically ChatGPT and the text-based large language models that are, you know, that's used for this, are only trained on text. They're not actually capable of watching videos and understanding the content within those videos. They're not capable of that. You would have to have a transcription of the video, and then it can, you know, quote unquote, read that text of the, you know, the transcription. But for as far as I can tell, there was no transcription for this video. So I have no idea how even would know what's in the video. And lo and behold, I'm pretty sure it doesn't, because the video has absolutely nothing to do with it. I mean, not like it was an exercise video, but it had nothing to do with push-ups or sit-ups or like all the stuff that it listed, right? Specifically the push-ups that it cited for this, like, to this page, that it cited specifically about that topic of push-ups, was nowhere to be found on the actual page, right? Or maybe it was somewhere further down or something like that. As far as I can tell, the website it linked to was like an exercise website where they post videos and articles about a number of different types of exercises and all this other stuff, right? But the specific one that it linked, when you actually watch the video, it has nothing to do with push-ups or sit-ups, right? All right? If you can, like, I'm not sure if you're understanding what I'm getting here, right? And this tracked as I looked at the other links. Every single link that I clicked into, or at least not every single one, most of the links I clicked into, did not actually mention the exact words, and sometimes not even the concept of what the quote-unquote cited, you know, thing was citing. So, for instance, if a thing was talking about, you know, this is how you do sit-ups, or this is why this type of exercise is good for your core, or whatever, right? The sentence it is using to say, okay, for instance, if it says, do push-ups, you know, do 3 sets of push-ups, or do 3 reps of, you know, 5 sets of push-ups, or whatever, right? And they have this sentence, and they link that sentence. If you go and click the link that's cited, that's supposed to be citing that sentence will not be found anywhere in the article, if it even is an article. And then on top of that, sometimes the topic itself would not even be in that article. So, you know, the topic of push-ups, for instance, was not in this video talking about exercising. Nowhere were they ever doing push-ups. So where did they get this from? This is what they're talking about, right? AI, a lot of this quote-unquote AI is hallucinating, but I wouldn't even call it that. What's actually going on is that it shows what I was talking about before, that this is not a real AI. It's not trying to solve problems. It's not matching together concepts, right? It is a language-based pattern-matching machine, right? It is looking at the shape of letters, right? The sequence of letters, I should say. Right, the sequence of letters that determine what's called a word, and then a sentence, and then a paragraph, and so on and so forth. Right, it's looking at what sequence of words, what sequence of letters, are most likely to be put together, right, to come next. And because of that, it can, if you feed it enough data, billions of text, then yeah, it can find patterns that says, okay, this letter, this text, this word is most likely to come next, right? And because of that, it doesn't actually, quote unquote, know what those words mean, right? For all intents and purposes, these letters could just be, you know, freaking shapes. They could be leaves. They could be, you know, colors. It doesn't really matter, right? And that's why what's so amazing about this is that the closest thing to an AI is actually the models training these LLMs, right? Not the actual, you know, LLM itself. Meaning, the systems that are able to match patterns between anything, right? Whether it's visual, like with the deepfakes, you know, the visuals going on, the pixels in an image, or if it's sound, right? Those audio deepfakes and those audio synthesizers and things like that, other ones that make music and stuff like that, or if it's you know, they use them for a lot of different stuff. But basically, the systems that are training these models that are then used for GPT or, you know, text-based things or art-based things or whatever, right? the products that we're getting is actually fairly dumb. And you see that as you actually click through these links. And here's another example, right, where I feel like people would give it a little too much credit. So another one was trip planning. Right, this is something I would love to get help with. Like, I have never traveled outside of the States. I would love to figure out what's a good place to travel, what's the checkout, how do I create my itinerary, this, that, and the other, right? So when I click into their demo example, they say, oh, here's some good places to go in Europe, right? and they were listing out, oh, say Barcelona is great for the nightlife and this, that, and the other, right? Sounds accurate. It sounds like it makes sense. But then you click into the link that is sorting, that is supposed to be sourcing from, and that link does not mention anything about the nightlife of Barcelona. All right? Maybe there might be a nightlife in Barcelona. I figure there would be. But the the thing that it is citing did not mention that at all. So where did they get this from? Right? This is the point here. This is the very, very disturbing and worrying problem of these systems. Right? Search is a terrible use case because search is supposed to surface, right, information. And information is more than just a collection of sequence and words. Right? It's supposed to be knowledge that connects concepts together, that helps you to understand a certain concept. And when we're searching for things, we're looking for things like accuracy. We're looking for things like readability and, you know, quantitative, qualitative value of it, right? What's the quality of this information, right? How good is it? How useful is it? How practical is it? Right? Can I apply it? All these things. We're not just looking to see, does it sound like it might make sense, right? And in actuality, this is actually where even Google gets it wrong. The entire reason why Google is so successful is not really because it is a great search engine. It's because it's a great bias engine, right? It's a great way to find stuff that that confirms whatever biases you have, right? Because the way that you search things, it will match it. It says, okay, you're searching for, you know, COVID denialism stuff, right? Is COVID real? Then you're going to find stuff that says COVID is real and COVID is not real, right? And if before they put the moderation stuff in there, right, you would just as easily find stuff that says COVID is not real, right? And then you might search, is COVID not real, right? And you get more and more search results that return pages that says COVID is not real, right? Because that's the whole point of the search engine, is to connect you with the things that you're searching for. It doesn't question your search, right? And so that's why they had to add in other things that says, oh, you know, other people might have looked for this, right? Or moderation things like, oh, you know, it doesn't matter whether or not you think searches COVID is real or COVID is good or whatever. That's a bad example. I should have said climate change, goodness. or freaking vaccines. But you get my point, right? It's like the way in which you question, the way in which you enter your question will determine, you know, the type of information you get out. But Google has been really good at kind of ameliorating that, right? At making it harder to clearly see the bias, right? Because they would map it to like your geographic area or, you know, other people that have searched similar types of terms. So you don't necessarily get, you know, the exact thing that you're searching for. You'll find other, you know, hopefully relevant things. And sometimes that's good, sometimes it's bad. But what you end up seeing is that it actually increases the amount of misinformation and mistrust in the world. Why? Because there are people out there who either really do believe or want people to believe, to buy their stuff, that, you know, this false information or this other thing is, you know, real. And so when you search for the terms that, well, basically these people know what you're going to be searching for, because there's all this data on how people search and what they look for and all these other things, and so they can target their information to align with what you will most likely search for. So when you search for a specific term, they can say, oh yeah, show my result, regardless of whether or not the result is actually accurate, right? So all this to say, search is already under siege, right, with finding good information and finding trusting sources and all this other stuff. And, you know, AI makes this problem 100 times worse, or I should say, quote unquote AI, right? These chatbots make the problem 100 times worse, because the chatbots are not designed to find accurate information. There is no way, at least as far as we can tell so far, that the way these are trained, that they're even able to understand what information is, much less how accurate it is, right? They're designed to put together text. They're great for natural language process, right? This is the original purpose of them, natural language processing, right? Being able to understand what people are typing when they, you know, are speaking in regular plain text. So instead of trying to use some regular expressions, meaning some complicated, it's not that complicated, but, you know, some somewhat esoteric, you know, commands to try and get what you want, you can just talk to it like you would in, like a regular person. But the problem there is that we humans tend to anthropomorphize things very easily, right? I've discussed this in quite a few other episodes, talking about how much of spirituality and religion probably came from this desire and this I don't know, tendency we have to look at things and ascribe personality to them, ascribe humanity to them, ascribe some sort of anthropomorphization, right? Like we can look at a tree, and as we talk in the area of that tree begins swaying and we feel better, and so now we think that the tree has some sort of spirit in it, right? And I'm not here to like trying to debunk that or anything like that. I'm not trying to belittle that. I really do think there might be some important spirituality stuff there, right? But that's a conversation for another day. The point here is that whether or not you think spirits or gods or whatever is real, that's besides the fact, right? The point here is that these chatbots, right, are not designed for that. It's like somebody planting a tree and saying, now this is your God, right? Regardless of how you feel about trees, you're going to feel some type of way if somebody says this is a god. You're like, hold up now, right? I don't follow your belief. And it's far worse than that, because unlike a tree is a known element, right? We all kind of know how trees work, more or less. And, you know, they have a deep history within our real world, right? But these quantum AIs do not. They're a simulacra. There's no real world equivalent to them. This is something that we're making up in our imaginations based on decades of more imagination, right? Of what people would like, you know, the world to be like, right? Imagine if the trees could talk back, you know? And so we're building on this story, this imagination, this almost shared hallucination of what we want to get out of the world. And we're putting that on these machines that are not at all designed to do that. Or maybe that's the problem. It's like some of the people designing these things... Sorry, let this car pass. Some of these people designing these things do indeed want to do that, right? They do indeed want to build a god, a super intelligent being, right? But they themselves don't really understand what all goes into that, right? Like I said before, many of these programmers and developers, they spurn the very idea of liberal arts. A lot of them don't really read much philosophy beyond like Kant or something like that. They might have read like a handful of, you know, Western philosophers and think they know everything about, you know, what philosophy is about. A lot of them spurn the very idea of, you know, theological, you know, history and things like that. The history of religion. A lot of them spurn the idea of indigenous spirituality and animism and all these other things. And so, you know, they're going into this fairly blind, thinking that they're building a god. So anyways, let me claw this back. Not really claw back, but let me go loop back to what I was saying with being AI. It is indeed very exciting, right? It is indeed very amazing that we finally are at a point in our technological, you know, development that we're able to, in essence, almost talk to a computer, right? Like you would another person. But the problem that a lot of people are ignoring, right? And this especially goes towards all those articles you see with, oh, this AI was trying to break up this person's marriage, or this AI got mad, you know, this, that, and the other, right? They're completely ignoring what's actually happening just so that they can, you know, have this trippy experience. Again, what's actually happening is that it's putting together a sequence of words, a sequence of letters, a sequence of sentences that are most likely to be, you know, to follow whatever response or whatever is being said. And on top of that, it's also designed to reflect the way in which you are talking, right? So similar to what I was saying with the search engines, right? Before Google, even still now, right, it still happens, but before Google had, you know, certain moderation abilities and certain, you know, ways to make text more relevant, you only ever got search results for exactly what you searched into. So if you type in, you know, is climate change fake? You will get results of people saying climate change is fake, regardless of the accuracy of their actual articles or whatever, their actual arguments. It just, you know, kind of dumbly gives you exactly what you were asking for. And these models, these quote unquote AI, these chatbots are basically the same thing, right? If you say, you know, are you real? It's gonna basically talk about that topic of being real. And because it's trained on data from the wide web, a lot of it just basically stolen, right? Or I should say, you know, taken without permission, because it wasn't really stolen. It's still there. Like, it, you know, it's not like, you know, they're the only ones that have it now. It's more like they copied. There we go. They copied a bunch of stuff on the internet without asking, without filtering much. Or maybe they did. Maybe they did filter it. Who knows? We don't know, though. That's the point, right? We don't know exactly what they copied or why or how, when. But we do know that most of it was not consensual, right? They didn't go through and say, oh, can we get this information from this form and, you know, use it for this purpose and all? No, they just crawled, right? They just scraped. So all that being said, when you ask it, are you real? It's going to look at the training data and find all the text that is talking about AIs being real. And it's going to return that in the form of a conversation. So let me say that again. Just like in the regular search engine, if you type, you know, is AI real? What will you get? You will get conversations of, you will get search results where people are writing articles and videos and this, that, and the other about AI being real. And some of them will say AI is not real, AI is real, AI, you know, blah, 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 right? But it will have the words AI real somewhere in there. And Google's really, you know, the people at Google's really smart. So they also, you know, will loop in things about, you know, that's related to AI and related to being real. So you might find things like, you know, robots are real, or, you know, robots are coming for your jobs, or this, that, and the other, right? Like things that are related to these topics, right? This is what you will get if you just search on a regular search engine that nobody thinks is alive or intelligent, right? They know it's amazing, it's powerful, but they wouldn't call a search engine intelligent. Now look at this chatbot. It's the same idea. You ask it, are you real? And it's going to search, basically, you know, all the results, all the articles and all this other stuff about AI with the words AI and real and you know, any related topics of, you know, robots or this, that, and that, the other and real. And instead of returning that back to you in just some search results, is going to craft a series of sequences, right? A series of letters and sentences that reflect the same content. It's going to just return that right back. So when people say these things are thinking or are emotional or are mad or angry, this, that, and the other, it's not that this machine, right, has something inside of it that is anywhere close to what we would deem as emotions or even logic or thought, or right? It's that it's going through a series of calculations that is trying to return back the same tone, right? And by tone, you can see that in yes, tone is hard to see on the internet, but you can still see that by the types of words that people use, right? So it would turn back, you know, words that seem like it's that should be quote unquote defensive or offensive or, you know, or quote unquote angry or this, that, and the other, right? It's going to return back these series of letters and sentences that reflect the exact thing that you would see on those articles, right? On those forum posts, on those Reddit posts, on those Twitter threads, right? All the letters and sentences that you see on the internet is going to return stuff that reflect the same thing, the same series of letters. But again, here's the point, right? It's reflecting that. It's crafting that. It's not returning you the exact results because it's not trained to do that, right? What people have to understand is that in the process of training these machines, and I had to learn this myself, right? Because I remember mentioning several times, it would be cool if these things can just cite their sources. But even before, and I should have, you know, even guessed this, because even before I made a Twitter thread about this, and somebody who was much more knowledgeable on the topic showed me how, basically how these things are trained, is that they take all this text and data and stuff like that and basically smash it together, right? So it becomes a mishmash of Like think about it like a hot pot or a soup, right? And everything is now intermixed, and then it goes to find the patterns in that soup, right? I say, okay, this word is associated with that word, associated with that word, this, that, and the other, right? So it forms these patterns in the soup, but it can't take the soup back out, right? You can't undo the soup, and so it tries to copy the soup. Say, okay, that's your soup there, you know? Now let me make my own soup. And it copies those same patterns. So it literally can't cite its sources, because the sources are in that soup. It's gone. It's, you know, it's all mishmashed together. And so it's literally creating its own soup that reflects, that is trying to reflect the same things it sees in that soup. And it's sad that we have to use this anthropomorphic words to describe it, like sea and soup and all these other things. That's not really what's going on, but you know, that's the language that we can use to communicate these topics. But I hope you see my point here. So honestly, I should have realized that these citations were not you know, the thing that I was hoping they would be. I was hoping that somebody at Microsoft, this amazing big-ass company with billions of dollars putting into it, that somebody would have been able to figure something out, right? Somebody would have been able to figure out a way to, maybe they use another AI to go look at that soup and then, you know, backtrack and find the sources and then link it back up to the soup when they're, you know, to the copy of the soup and this, that. Like, maybe I was hoping that somebody would do something incredibly smart like that. But they didn't. They just left it all in the soup. So not only is it looking at the soup, they probably trained it on things, on citations, on what citations look like. And so now it's copying not just the soup. And again, the soup is just, you know, the sequence of letters and stuff that makes content, that makes, you know, sentences and paragraphs and language. Not only is it copying that, but it's also copying the citations. Right? If you say, okay, now I have a seafood, you know, soup where I put some shrimp in there, I put some fish in there, right? Those are your citations. So right, so just copying that, it says, okay, here is my carrot soup, but now I'm put some seafood in. I put some shrimp in there, right? So I put some citations in there. So it looks like the same thing, but it's not actually the thing. It's not actually, you know, sourcing stuff, because it doesn't know what sourcing is. It doesn't know any of the meaning behind the content. It doesn't know what these concepts actually are. It can just connect patterns that seem related to this sequence of words. So I'm very, very worried that Microsoft is just going to put this out anyways, even though they have been getting slapped, right? People, you've been seeing a lot of stuff in the news like, oh, these, you know, AIs are doing weird stuff, basically. But most of those articles and this, that, and the other are talking about the wrong stuff. They're over here saying, oh, AI got mad. AI, you know, it got, it's unhinged. It's this, that, it's going crazy. That's not what's going on. It's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. that's what it's meant for, right? If you are typing, if you are having a quote-unquote conversation, right, with the chatbot, it's going to return the same types of things that it thinks, or not say it thinks, that it calculates, right, should be returned. So if you ask it, you know, are you a terrible person? It's going to look up all the words and the text, you know, all the words and paragraphs and all the Twitter threads and Reddit posts, whatever they trained it with, right, all that stuff that talks about terrible people, how's those words, terrible person, and connects the patterns and say, okay, when you see, you know, language that says terrible person, you're going to see, you know, this language, I am not a terrible person, or you're a terrible person, or this, that, and the other, right? You're going to find all these texts, you're going to find languages and sentences, you know, that reflect all this stuff, right? And so it just copies that. So, okay, this is what I should be doing, here you go, all right? It's just giving you the search results. And so people are saying, oh, this AI is unhinged. No, it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. And so if people are focusing on that side of the problem, they're focusing on the wrong side of the problem. And if anything, it's just making this thing more exciting, because now people are like, oh, wow, do we have an unhinged AI out there? Let me go mess with it. You know how people are. And so I really worry that even though this is problematic, it is not good that this chatbot is returning these sorts of responses. But because people are talking about it, right, is bringing attention to it, I worry that Microsoft is going to be like, you know what, this is bad, but let's put it out there anyways, because we're going to get more attention. Like, people are going to use it. At least we're going to get some more clicks, right? And that's what I'm really, really worried about. And this is just one example here, right? Another reason why this is so concerning is that even outside of Microsoft and Google, right, there are other companies that have and are trying to use this as a conversation, as a companion, right? In fact, there was I forget the exact name, but there was apparently a bot or something like that, a service already out there that was already doing this for months, if not years, of using it as a sort of romantic partner. Right, where people were able to talk to this chatbot and get responses that made them feel like they were in a relationship with somebody, even though it was just a bot. And they recently removed that feature, and people got mad. And the reason why this worries me is because, I think I mentioned it before, it's like porn, right? Porn just gives you what you think that you want. What you think sex looks like, right? What you fantasize about, even though that is not real, even though that's not even healthy half the time, right? A lot of the porn that you see doesn't talk about, you know, how to be an intimate partner and how to please your partner in a proper way. No, they feed into this idea of patriarchy, misogyny, into, you know, the woman being an object for you to get your pleasure off of and stuff like that. And I say that as a person who has been addicted to porn, right? I don't know if I actually talked about that, but I understand that, you know, where that comes from. And it's so easy to get into this and just be looking at this stuff and like, oh man, this is, you know, you can make arguments for why you think this is good and why porn isn't so bad and stuff like that. I've made all those same arguments. Now, I still firmly believe that adult content creation is good and can, or at least can be good. But unfortunately, under the system of capitalism and exploitation and patriarchy and stuff like that, it's not good. It's extremely problematic. And there's a bunch of research that shows you why and how and all this other stuff, right? When we look at porn, or any, this is not just porn, it could be anything, right? Playing, even playing Call of Duty, right? It normalizes this sort of thought process. And it's not that, you know, this stuff makes you more violent or something like that, right? It's a lot more subtle than that. It's a lot more subtle and a lot more concerning, in my opinion. Whether you're playing a lot of quote-unquote violent video games like Call of Duty, or, you know, watching a bunch of porn or talking to AI chatbots, what's actually happening is that your view of the world, right, your perspective, your even your realm of experiences is being filtered through this highly, what's the word I want to use here, exaggerated, right, lens. Your view of the world is being skewed by this lens. And yes, we do have some amount of filter in our brain that allows us to distinguish between fact and fiction. But it's very hazy, right? It's very unclear sometimes of what is fact and fiction. And what parts of it is fact and what parts of it is fiction, right? A lot of times people play Call of Duty and you say, oh, I'm not going to go pick up and gun and go kill people. Like, it's not going to make me more violent. That part is easy to distinguish. A lot of folks, you know, a lot of reactionaries like to say, oh, Call of Duty's making people violent. No. But the part you can't tell is the parts that you don't know, is the parts that you're unaware of, the parts that you're indoctrinated to believe, such as, you know, the enemies that you're fighting in Call of Duty, right? The idea of having a clear good and evil, right? The idea that the U.S. military is incredibly powerful and competent and amazing, right? The idea that, you know, these people in the Middle East, they're the bad guys, and, you know, the idea of that despots are in Mexico are all terrible people and this, that, and you. Like, there's all these, you know, little bits of propaganda that's put in these sorts of games. Right? Same thing for porn, right? There's all sorts of bits of propaganda. The idea that, you know, you should treat your woman like a, you know, whatever, right? Get her to give you head and, you know, do this certain act of, you know, without really thinking about it, you know, not communicate during sex and just turn her around and smack her into, you know, all this other stuff, right? Like, you can search up some really crazy stuff. And it's the same thing for AI chatbots, right? There's bits of propaganda in there, bits of bias and all this other weird stuff that is on the internet that this stuff is trained from and which will be communicated to you. And some things you'll be able to say, okay, that's not real. But there's a lot of things in there that you will not be able to tell whether or not it's real or not, right? Whether or not it's real or good, right? I can't say give very specific examples because I haven't used it. But just from, you know, thinking about it and overall, from what I've seen with my own experiments with like ChatGPT and things like that, you'll notice, like, for instance, they might simplify, you know, certain relationships, or they might be very, what's the term? Acquiescing, right? Like, they might say, oh, yeah, this is how, yeah, you're an awesome person, this, that, and the other. And sometimes they might give you good advice, but sometimes they won't. And you won't really be able to distinguish it half the time, right? You might feel like you're in this loving, caring relationship with this bot, but you may not realize that in a real loving and caring relationship, it takes a lot more effort sometimes, right? Sometimes it doesn't, but sometimes it does. But the point of having a loving and caring relationship is not that the partner is always going to be on your side or never going to question you or, you know, this, that, and the other. It's that even when they do question you, even when they do disagree with you, even when they do have problems or disagree or this, that, and the other, right? It's worth the effort to go through it because you care about them. You realize that they are their own person. And even if you get into an argument or something like that, right? If that person is somebody that you truly care for, you're going to go through the effort of saying, okay, maybe let's take a step back and we'll come back at this, you know, when we can talk about it better. And maybe that makes it worse. Oh, I don't want to talk about it now, this, that, and the other. But then you realize, okay, you know, whether or not that's healthy or not, right? That you can say, okay, I'm not in a place where I can discuss this right now, right? And that this is where you can tell if this is a person that's actually good for you or not. Because at that point, you know, your partner might say, oh, you know, okay, fine, I understand. Or they say, no, you're terrible, blah, 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 blah. And then you realize, oh, this person is not who I should be with right now, right? And so it builds the skill of emotional intelligence, of conflict resolution, of being able to tell the difference between a person that is trustworthy and credible and this, that, and the other, and somebody who is not. It like dealing with these sorts of conflicts allows you to understand, you know, how to actually use this skill, how to actually communicate with people, how to communicate your own ideas, how to communicate your emotions, like all this stuff that you would not be able to get if you're just talking to an AI chatbot that makes you feel good. I'm sure people can make the argument that, oh, shouldn't everyone feel good, you know? but then you get into, I will come back with, you know, the hedonic treadmill, right? Life is more than just getting satisfied than just getting satisfaction. It's more than just trying to be, you know, get pleasure or trying to feel good. All right. It's about trying to find purpose, trying to find not just purpose, but like trying to find what life is, right? What that is for yourself. Being able to deal with conflicts and different ways of viewing the world, you know, having to step out of your, you know, your perspective and your comfort zone in order to see things from a completely different perspective, which can, you know, bring you to a new, you know, level of maturity or knowledge or this, that, and the other, right? Life is more than just, I want to feel good. And yes, there's moments of that, don't get me wrong. And I actually do think AI, and or rather chatbots, can be very, very good for like a occasional pick-me-up, right? Like a, oh, yeah, you're doing good today. Let's get it, right? Just in case you don't have that in your life or whatever. Yeah, it's good for that. But then it goes into, becomes an addiction, right? A constant stream of that. This is going back to like what I was saying about adult content, right? I actually do think, yes, porn can be a good thing sometimes. Like sometimes you won't be in a space where you can have an intimate time with your partner, right? You won't be able to do that with them. And maybe you need that visual aspect, right? Maybe you are with your partner, but you need some ideas, right? And so adult content can be great for that. But if you're looking at it every single day and, you know, multiple times a day or always trying to beat off and all this other stuff, like it becomes unhealthy. And again, the content of it matters as well. You can't just look at anything on there, right? You have to be very, very discerning. So this is why I think the very topic of using AI as a companion, as, oh, I had a 2-hour conversation with this bot, is very concerning, right? To put it in one of these newsletters I sometimes read, is the newsletter is kind of problematic, but one point they did say that I like to, it's kind of inflammatory, but it's very masturbatory. Right, it's very masturbatory to say I had a 2-hour conversation with an AI, because what you're actually saying is that I had a 2-hour conversation with myself, or you know, with the internet or whatever. Like I was just looking in the mirror for 2 hours and be like, oh yeah, you're so terrible. Oh, you're so great. Or you're so right. It's right. If it's one thing if you're doing it, if you're trying to meditate or you're trying to, you know, ascertain, you know, the types of things that people might think on the internet. But it's a completely other thing to pretend that this bot is a person and that you can have a meaningful conversation with it as if it's a person. When in reality, all it's doing is reflecting, you know, the entirety of the internet back to you in your own lens, in your own language, in a way that, you know, is most engaging to you. And that's another thing, right? A lot of the internet today, a lot of these technological tools today are focused more on engagement rather than actual practical value, right? And I use that word because, even though I hate that word, because that word is often used as a sort of excuse for this, right? To say, oh, it's valuable because people are using it. No. Cigarettes are, you know, people use cigarettes. It doesn't mean they're good for you. All right? If you say cigarettes are valuable, it's not because they're good. It's because they're addictive. And, of course, people will use it. All right? It has things in it that will get you hooked. So you're smoking a pack a day. So yeah, if that is your idea of value, then that's quote unquote valuable. But when we think about things that are valuable in our everyday life, we don't think about things that we just buy just because we have to buy it and we stuff like that, right? We think about things that we care about, that help, that is helpful to us, that's practical, that is, you know, useful, that is helping us grow as people, or that has some, you know, meaning to us. And so the fact that these words are being misused or abused or, you know, manipulated so that people can buy their products is very, 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 very concerning. So yeah, I'm really scared of the way people are looking at these quote-unquote AIs. And I keep saying quote-unquote because, again, they're not freaking intelligent, man. The most intelligent part about them is the people and the processes that go into making it possible. But we keep using this term. We keep, and it's so worrying because we have, like, we all have this fantasy of what AI is. But the way it's actually being created today is almost counter. It's almost the opposite of what AI actually should be, or at least what we want it to be. It's like a giant bait and switch that's happening right now. People are like, oh yeah, we got AI. No, we have super advanced chatbots that just lie. I don't even want to say lie, because lie implies that you kind of know what you're saying, and you're purposely otherwise, you know, not saying the correct thing. They just make shit up. They're bullshit generators. The fancy word is stochastic parrots. Right? Just like a parrot repeats back to you, you know, the words that you teach it or that it hears in the environment. The stochastic meaning, it repeats the things that are statistically relevant. Right? Again, going back to those patterns. If it sees a bunch of patterns that are highly, you know, relevant, that are highly correlated, it's going to repeat that back. It's a parrot, so stochastic parrot. But another term I like to use, I've been using recently, is a funhouse mirror. Right? Funhouse mirror is a mirror that reflects things in very funny ways, right? They're curved in different ways, so then when you look in it, your head is big, or, you know, your waist is small, or, you know, whatever. It has a lot of these weird reflections, and it's really fun to look in it. But you recognize that this funhouse mirror is a mirror. It's a reflection, right? It's not some being trapped inside the mirror that wants to get out. But that's how people are doing, are thinking about this quote-unquote AI, right? They're like, oh, maybe there's, you know, it's becoming sentient and it's trying to get out, or it wants to be free, or it wants to do this. It doesn't want to do anything. It's a fucking calculator. It's a mirror. You're not going to look in a mirror and be like, oh, man, my reflection is trying to get out. Right? Like, my reflection is mad at me because it's angry. No, you're angry. Right? Or the mirror itself is designed to make you look angry when you look at it, because the way it's bent, right? The way it's designed. So I really hope that whoever listens to this, you know, understands these things and spreads the word. Because you already know that the more this gets talked about and the longer this goes on, the more people are going to use it. And the more people are going to be like, oh yeah, we have AI, when it's really just some bullshit. Something I want to talk about as well in the kind of related way is how a lot of our technology has been a giant bait and switch, has been a huge letdown, all right? It's a hot topic that I also think I mentioned before. I mentioned a lot of stuff in these series of podcasts. But the idea that we benefit from these technologies, the idea that we've progressed from these technologies, is like a giant bit of propaganda that many of us, if not most of us, have taken to heart, taken, you know, advantage, or has taken advantage of us, right? We like to look around the world and say, oh yeah, the world is so advanced now. we're so progressed. We've progressed so much. But in reality, if you made a pros and cons list, right, of each piece of technology that we say we've gotten so much from, I think we'd, like, that list would be a lot less pros than people are are thinking, right? I'm not going to say they haven't been beneficial at all. Of course they have. But let me be specific. Three big things. All right, number one, industrial farming, industrialization, I guess you could see as a general concept. Number two, computers. And then number three, smartphones. All right. With each of these, there has been a idea, right? Even before and while they were developing, while they were being released or whatever, people had this idea that they're going to change the world forever. Not just change the world, but make, but push humanity forward, right? To greater heights of not just productivity, but also of leisure, of free time, of freedom, right? You had this idea that, for instance, industrial farming would free us from slavery and, you know, all this other stuff that there was back then. And to some areas, it was true. But not for those reasons. Right? What people have to realize is that this is, like, this is another, I'm not going to go on the whole thing again, but this is one of the big reasons why the Civil War was fought. It wasn't because people were like, oh, let's not do slavery anymore. No. A lot of people wanted to do slavery, even in the North. But they thought it more profitable to have these machines do it. Right, and just addendum on that, let me get back to it. But also, what you saw was that they wanted to stop the spread of slavery in the South. Not be, again, not because they actually cared, but because they realized that the South would have way more power, way more economic power, and things like that, right? Due to the three-fifths compromise or whatever they call it, right? Every five slaves was counted as like a third or whatever of a vote, even though, you know, slaves couldn't actually vote or anything like that. And so that meant the slave owners had way more power in the Congress, in the, you know, in their electoral politics than the people in the North who didn't really have slaves as much. So there was a pretty much mostly due to this economic, political, you know, reasoning, did they go to war? Because it was like, oh, wait, you know, if they, you know, once you had the Louisiana Purchase and you had all this other land out there, they realized that if the South bought up this land and used these slave plantations, they would have way more power, way more purchasing power, and way more political power. So they're like, oh, we can't do that. You can't have slaves past this point. And the South was like, nah, we want that, right? So that's why, basically why they went to war. So the whole point here is to point out, remind people, educate people that that was the reason why we had this you know, why we had less slavery. It wasn't because machines freed people to, you know, have more free time and all this other stuff. No, they didn't give a shit. And you know this. We know this for sure because of quote-unquote wage slavery, or what did they call it, labor slaves or whatever, right? The white slaves. And you can see this everywhere in, like, Frederick Douglass's writing The Black Reconstruction. He talks about this. The abolition movement itself split, right? There were some people who did not like slaves, right? The abolitionists. But they split. A lot of them were like, actually, we care more about the plight of these white people in the North who were, quote-unquote, slaves to the machines, to the industrial farm. And don't get me wrong, they had good reason to be worried, not only because of the terrible conditions in America, but also because of the terrible conditions in Europe. Remember, a lot of this industrialization happened in Europe first. And so they saw in Europe a lot of people were living absolutely horrible lives, right? Think about all the stories of London that you hear in the 1800s and so, like, it's terrible over there. It was terrible. And they were like, oh, we don't want that, all right? You know, these people working 80, 90 hours a week or more, you know, in these terrible factories where a lot of them were killed or, you know, poisoned with all this stuff they were doing and stuff like that. And so they were like, oh, we don't want, you know, whites, we don't want our white folks. Damn, I lost track of time. I wasn't paying attention, and I don't know where it cut off, and I have to get back to work soon. So let me just say a couple things. Just real quick, try to do a quick fly through of my thoughts on the topic. So basically, I wanted to talk about how technological development has not really been as beneficial as we'd like to think, right? With the Industrial Revolution, yes, we got a lot of those benefits, but also came with that came the complete destruction of the environment, right? Or the acceleration of the destruction of the environment, right? We saw way more logging and forest deforestation, you know, or that's repetitive, but you know what I mean. But way more deforestation happening, way more industrial farming, and yes, we got more. Wow. The cop siren is loud. Yes, we got more, you know, yields, crop yields from that. But because of that, there was this massive proliferation of cash crops, right? And because of that, there's been a complete destruction of many of these beautiful land that was there before. Now, a lot of this land has been increasingly infertile. Infertile. So you have increasing levels of desertification in a lot of these areas, and a lot of those cash crops happen in areas where, you know, the people were essentially colonized, right? By that's why they call America an empire, by a lot of the American corporate interests and things like that, where they went in and say, okay, you make this thing, if you export more, we're going to give you a little bit of money. And so, you know, they would export more and more and more until that's all they're exporting, that's all they're growing. And that destroys a lot of their culture, a lot of their habitat, a lot of these other things, right? Again, I'm simplifying this somewhat, but you can just look this up, right? And even with the Dust Bowl, right? The Dust Bowl is another great example of the fact that a big reason why the Great Depression even happened, or at least this part of it, right, was because of this cash crop, right? This idea that we should industrialize our farms, where you can have massive swaths of land all for one type of, you know, crop that is quote unquote productive, that is quote unquote high yield and stuff like that. And what ends up happening is, as soon as there's one virus or beetle or something or whatever that is a natural predator to this type of crop, or naturally eats this type of crop or whatever, the entire land area just becomes completely destroyed, right? You see this also in logging industry, where there's massive forest farms of one type of tree that they want to use for building, right? So yes, it's great that we can have all this construction going on, but a huge amount of that construction comes from completely unsustainable practices, right? Where they grow a bunch of trees that is just one type of tree, like a birch or whatever. I don't know which trees are used, but they use a specific type of tree that they think is high yield and will be great for construction. And as soon as a beetle comes in that eats this specific type of tree, all those trees are gone, right? And that destroys the whole housing industry all the way down the supply chain. And the land is now fucked, right? I'm just flying through this stuff. You see the same thing with concrete, right? Which we use all the time for all sorts of building stuff. Now, they use a specific type of sand for that concrete. And now that sand is becoming harder and harder to find. And so that's why our construction is becoming more and more expensive. It's because concrete is harder to create, right? And so you see this with metals. You see this with the chip industry, right? Microchips. Yes, it's amazing that we can create computers and all this other stuff, but it comes at the cost of these rare metals, rare earth metals that are rare, hard to find. And so it takes a lot of effort to find them, to mine them, it destroys the land, all this other stuff, right? So it's unsustainable. So what you saw over the last 100, 200, even 400 years was basically an acceleration of the most destructive practices known to mankind, known to the earth maybe even, right? And so that's why we see all this climate change issues. And it's so much worse than people are really seeing. And yes, it's hard to really think about. It's hard to really come to grips with. It's depressing. But you can't just ignore it. You can't just ignore it and say, oh yeah, but we got computers. right? But you can do this podcast. Yeah, it's cool. But at what cost? If I'm dead, you know, in 10 years, if my grandkids have no, you know, if most people have no hope for even having grandkids, then what good is this fucking podcast? Right? I'm not making this podcast because, you know, I just, you know, it's cool or whatever. Like, I want this podcast to exist in 1,000 years. I want to have ancestors from in 10,000 years that go back and are able to look at what we are doing today and learn from it and all this other stuff. I'm not making this so that, you know, we all die in a couple of years, right? Like, we have to recognize that the benefits that we have today should not come at the cost of our future, right? And that's what I really want people to realize, to think about. Think about the benefits that we have and really ask yourself, is it worth it? Is it worth the life of your grandchildren, of your unborn children? Right? And I'm not pointing this out as some long-termist thing where it's, you know, more efficient to not stop drilling oil so that you can pay off, you know, 1,000 charities next year. No. This is a real practical way of looking at it. Right? Where you really think about, okay, yes, it's great that we have an iPhone, that we have smartphones, that we're able to communicate across the world. Now, how can we create a world where we can have this, either this level of technology or this type of technology for generations to come, right? Instead of thinking about, oh, it's cool that we have AI that's not actually AI. Think about, oh, what would it take to actually build a real AI? So that, and specifically one that will not probably destroy us. You know, what would that take? Right? Really think about that. And then communicate that with other people and try to figure out a solution with other people and realize that it's going to take time. You're not going to, you know, be able to just sink $10 billion like these companies, billions of dollars into this so you can come up with a product, you know, in the next couple of years that make you $1 trillion, because that $1 trillion doesn't matter. Right? If you're burning up the earth. I want people to realize that we can have this technological progress without, you know, spending our own life to do it. Right? It's like if you watch an anime where the MC is like, oh, I'm gonna do this amazing power, but it's gonna take 10 years off my life. Now when you're watching this anime, you realize that, oh wow, that's kinda crazy. But you also realize that you don't really care, because you're not going to be watching this anime in 20 years. You're like, or maybe like if it's Naruto or something like that, right? But 9 times out of 10, that anime is not going to show that main character, you know, in 50 years, where now they regret, you know, taking, you know, 10 years off their life. So it's kind of a cop out. But if you think about it in the real world terms, think about it in the sense of, oh, I am 30 right now, but I'm going to use this power, or I'm going to, you know, use this technology that's going to take 20 years off my life. And the natural lifespan is 70, 80, whatever. So that means you only have 30 years left instead of 50, right? And not only that, right? But also think about the opportunity. Think about the fact that because of technological progress, at least sustainable ones, we can figure out ways to expand your lifespan so that once you get to the age of 60, we realize, oh, actually, we can make you younger. We can make it so you have another 60 years of life. But because you already sacrificed 20 years of your life, you'll never get there. So not only are you going to miss out on those 20 years of life, you're going to miss out on the 60. You're going to miss out on the ability to live far longer than you ever thought you would be able to live, because you sacrificed a future that you didn't actually have. To put it in investment terms, right? You're spending money that you don't actually have, that you can't afford to lose. And that's what we see with a lot of our technology. Yes, we're getting some benefits, but the cost is hidden. The cost is hand waved away. The cost is ignored. So that we're just going through life every day thinking that we're you know, making strides and all these massive advances, but we're striding right off a cliff. And I want us to really think about, if we want better technology, if we want a better world, then how can we do that more sustainably, more thoughtfully, so that we can be, we can really decrease the risk that we will all die in our lifetime, right? How can we decrease the risk of human extinction? How can we decrease the risk of, you know, your kids living worse lives than you live today? How can we decrease the risk of this technology, you know, being used for terrible purposes? How can we decrease the risk of, you know, people being addicted to technology to the point where they no longer even improve their lives? They no longer even can do good things, right? People all the time love to say, oh, people just are stuck on the internet. People just love drama. But a lot of this stuff is a result of badly designed technology. 100 years ago, or almost 100 years ago, when people were thinking about the invention of the internet, you know what they were saying? They're saying, oh, this is going to, you know, bring us into a new age of human civilization, right? They're imagining the ability where people are, you know, can automate most of their tasks, and so they only need to work, you know, 10 hours or 15 hours a week. You only need to work 2 hours a day and have three times as much productivity, right? They're imagining you were able to collaborate with people all across the world to create amazing projects together. And we can sort of kind of do some of that, but what we actually ended up with is that most people, right, are just scrolling Twitter, are just scrolling TikTok, are comparing themselves to Instagram models that are themselves, you know, trying to create this unrealistic image of what women look like, right? Instead, people are just scrolling and feeling depressed and anxious and terrible and stuff like that, and, you know, having these quote-unquote culture wars and, you know, unable to collaborate or even see from somebody else's perspective. Like, the internet has become synonymous with misinformation, with, you know, being disconnected from the world and all this other stuff, right? Which is crazy. Think about that. So next time you tell me, oh, but you're using a smartphone, tell me what you feel about that smartphone. How does it make you feel when it pings in the morning? How does it make you feel when you hear that Twitter feed go off? Or, you know, when you hear some news coming out about, you know, how people are using the internet? We can't just be happy about having stuff. We got to think about the quality. I could probably go on all day, but I really need to get back to work. So I hope I gave some perspective and some level of even hope, right? Because my point here is not to make people more depressed. My point here is to make people angry enough to want to change things. To make people aggravated enough to realize that they shouldn't be just complacent. To recognize that there are things we can be doing better and should be doing better, and it only takes realizing that to do better. Hoping I just wake people up to do a little bit more. So as always, if you want to talk, if you want to work together, if you want to do something, if you want to create a better world together, hit me up. Let's talk. Let's work. So as always, thanks for listening and have a great day. See ya. Bye-bye.